Welcome to Dial In for Maple, the AV Club's podcast that normally takes a deep dive look at Riverdale. But today, we're doing something different. We're trekking across Sweetwater River into Greendale to discuss the first season of Netflix's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I'm your host today, Cameron Sheets, and this week, I'm joined by a very special guest, the AV Club's deputy TV editor, Danette Chavez. Danette, hello!
Hello, boils and ghouls.
Oh my gosh, you're killing it already. That's great.
I don't think it's too late for that, right? It's only November 2nd and it's my last chance to use that.
Right. It's still Halloween season, especially because the show's still out there and everyone's still watching it and talking about it. It's kind of helping Halloween live on longer than it does. Plus, we have another really scary holiday coming up just around the corner, which is the election day. Fingers crossed, little witch magic will help us out on election day. Wow, we're getting political already. Let's get into that in a little bit. Danette, we always like to start off in memory of Archie punching the ice to save Cheryl in the first season of Riverdale. We start off every episode with an ice puncher to punch the ice, to break the ice a little bit. And my question for this one is, because it was something that was talked a lot about in the development of this show, is what would be your dream version of a crossover show between, like a crossover episode between Riverdale and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina? What would you want to see in that?
Okay, so like in terms of a plot, right? Okay, so I would love to see Betty and Veronica maybe joining the Academy of Unseen Arts. Like, I think that would be a fun plot. But in terms of just like a scene I would like to see, I always look at Sabrina and Harvey as kind of the Archie and Betty from the comics, right? Not so much from the show, but where like you've got this like exceptional woman and this really average dude. And so I would just like to see them kind of looking at like lined up and looking across at each other like these mirror images, you know? That they just kind of give me that vibe.
Yeah, no, they definitely do kind of have that vibe. They're like so wholesome. In this, especially at the beginning before we really start getting the dark stuff. Yeah, I like that. I kind of like the whole, it makes me think of that there's a lot of old shows did this, but I remember an episode of Hey Arnold where they go to like the neighboring town and everyone's kind of like this alternate reality version of all the characters. And it feels like Sabrina and Harvey are the mirror image version of them. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think my dream crossover episode, and well, I also had already tweeted this, but I just want to see, it doesn't even need to be like a face-off, but I want to see Cheryl, Blossom, and Prudence in a room together. And maybe they just kind of like glare at each other for a full hour, but that would be probably the most riveting episode I could imagine.
I am going to have to agree with you on that. I actually, that sounds amazing. Sign me up.
Yeah, let's greenlight that for sure. Cool. Well, let's kind of get into things. I mean, this is, you know, usually we're talking about one episode of Riverdale a week, but we're kind of just trying to like talk about the season of Sabrina as a whole. I know a lot of people binged it, but I'm really excited to have you. I mean, I would be excited no matter what, but I'm really excited to have you this week because you wrote the AV Club's pre-air review for the series, and your piece on it was one of the first things I had seen about it ahead of time. So when I saw that you gave it a positive review, I was like, oh, thank goodness, like sigh of relief, like very, very excited to dig into it. So, I mean, I have some quotes from that I pulled and I want to kind of talk about. But like, what are your just general thoughts on this, the season as a whole?
You know, I think this is clear from just the headline, right, that the show takes its time, but it'll put a spell on you. I mean, I can understand why people might drop out at that halfway point because, you know, like it's interesting up until a certain part, but like it's with the sixth episode that it really that it turns into something that, you know, you want to race through to the end, which, you know, it works for a streaming series because you can actually do that, right? Like, you know, show can actually reignite its, you know, your faith in it because you can finish it out in a weekend. Where if it were posting on like a Riverdale schedule, like it might have a little more trouble. It's I think on average it's a great start to the show, but those first five episodes, the first five episodes will make you work for it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, you specifically say it's not until the sixth episode when the team starts to really delve into the darker side of Greendale. And I mean, I totally agree with you. I wonder if, I mean, I think I've seen conflicting thoughts on episode 5, which is the kind of like bottle episode, essentially, with the demon Batty Bat. and we can talk about that more later too, but like that kind of, that stands out for a couple reasons. One, it is completely separate from like, there is a pretty clear larger arc to this season, but this feels like Demon of the Week, almost like Buffy-like. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on that episode? And as like someone, if this was on a weekly CW sort of show where you're watching every week, do you think that that's an episode that people would have like started tuning out of?
Oh, no, I do think the fifth episode is actually, it is a very good episode on its own. But mm-hmm. like you mentioned, you know, it is a bottle episode because, you know, the idea is that Sabrina unleashes the sleep demon who then it torments the Spellmans in the house. And so it doesn't necessarily, like, you're right that it kind of feels of a piece with the general season, but it's very much like a monster or a demon of the week. It's very much in the spirit of Buffy. I love that they went with very practical effects for it.
I was going to say, the practical stuff was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for me, the reason the sixth episode marks the turning point is because it starts to blend the two worlds much better.
Or, you know,
the two worlds really start to merge in a compelling way. Like up until that point, and I, you know, this is something that I put in my review. Early on, I'm just like, oh my God, Sabrina, you know, just do it. Just put your name in that book. There's really nothing for you in the mortal world. Harvey is nice. Ross Lynch was great. And My Friend Dahmer. But I couldn't understand the appeal. Also, she's only 15. Like, why wouldn't you want to check out like a different, I mean, you know, 15 going on 16, but like, why wouldn't you want to check something else out? But it's with the sixth episode that they, you know, that it justifies the small town setting, you know, where you know, you understand
right.
not just why she might want to stay, but what could be keeping her from leaving.
Yeah, you start to get a sense too of, I mean, you definitely touched on this, like, this is a town that is special for a number of reasons. And like, I guess it's kind of just a weird coincidence, but it does kind of help serve the story that all of Sabrina's quote-unquote mortal friends end up having these weird supernatural connections. You've got Roz and the cunning that runs in her family, and then you've got Susie and Susie's great-great aunt. It was the ghost that kind of brought all these, that saved all these women back, all these witches way back in the day. And then Harvey, of course, comes from, I mean, it's talked about somewhat, but like he's maybe got like this witch hunting lineage that he comes from, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, and I agree with you. Once the possessed uncle, oh my gosh, Uncle Jesse, by the way, how funny is that?
Uncle Jesse is possessed.
Yeah, I mean, they had to have done that on purpose, right? It seems the sort of thing where it's like, you can't just name an uncle character Uncle Jesse and not bring up those connections.
Oh yeah, especially not when both of those shows are on Netflix.
Right. Oh, you're totally right. I forgot about that. Yeah, very, very funny. But right, that sort of sets things in motion, and you really get a sense of the darkness of the witch side of things and Sabrina diving into it. Another quote from your review, before I rambled too much, is you say, the historical subjugation of virtually everyone who's not a cishet white man clearly informs the series, but there is a hint of dogma in the stylishly frightening story. Like, I think that kind of sums up the general mission statement in a way. Like, you know, they certainly wanted to turn this into more, I mean, you know, a lot of people have, I think, jokingly thrown out the term like, oh, this is woke Sabrina. You have hot Archie on TV now and you have woke Sabrina. And I think that obviously is really interesting and a smart thing to play with. I think there's times where it feels like you're a little confused on what the show is trying to say, but it does become pretty clear, especially at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. It's sometimes, you know, they're a little heavy-handed in the treatment, but you know, like the club being called Wicca is kind of cute, like, you know, and that your mileage may vary there.
Yeah.
You know, you might have found that heavy handed, but I thought it was really funny. But yeah, it's very much like it's critical. I mean, it's not perfect in that, right? Like, I think this is something we're going to talk about a bit later, and really, you know, the treatment of its characters of color and it, you know, its LGBTQ characters. You know, it's not by any means perfect in that, but it has purpose. But it doesn't beat you over the head with any of that. You know, like the term patriarchy is thrown out a couple of times, but this doesn't tell, it shows.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the show, even when it is hitting these bigger themes and, you know, hitting on these really important themes, it still is fun. And there's like kind of a tongue in cheek. I mean, people have called it campy. Like there's certain parts of it that are extremely campy and so, so fun. I think it always has a good sense of humor about itself, which is important too. It keeps it light, no matter how like actually dark things in the show are actually getting, it's like a very fun, quick, fast paced show. And I think it's a really good tonal balance all the way throughout. I would say the whole season is. We've kind of talked about, well, only just a little bit, but I kind of want to start talking about the cast and all these characters. Of course, we can't not talk about Kiernan Shipka as Sabrina. She's in the lead role. I mean, what's your take? Do you think she makes a good anchor for the series?
You know, early on, I was worried that she was a little too natural. You know, like she, sometime early on, it feels like she is not in the same show as the rest of the Spellman family.
yeah.
But then it just, you know, over time, it begins to make sense. Like she is half mortal. Like she would not, you know, be perfectly, you know, in tune with the rest of the family because she's got this foot in the mortal world. And I think she teases, you know, there's a huge change by the end of the season, right? But,
yeah.
You know, she gives us glimpses of like this, you know, badass witch that she's going to become, you know, in the way that she sticks up for her friends, you know, the way that she taunts the principal, you know, who is played by Bronson Pinchot.
yeah, very funny. Did not know he was going to be in this, but
yeah. But, you know, like it's something else. This is another case of the show having to grow on you. But by the end, I was convinced. What about you?
Yeah, I liked her quite a bit. I mean, it's such a 180 from Mad Men, which is, obviously the thing that most other folks will know her from. It makes me want to, I know she's done a few like indie movies. She did this horror movie, The Black Coat's Daughter, I believe, that people seem to really like. And that makes me want to watch that and see. I mean, that is just a straight up horror, but I wonder if there is some sort of like bridging the gap sort of thing between Mad Men and this performance. I don't know. I think she's great. She's very earnest, but you do, you know, especially up front, as you were saying, she's always like trying to help her friends, but then you do kind of see, it's not entirely surprising when she has to do some of these like darker, more selfish things to accomplish her goals. Like I think she sells it. I know some friends of mine and some other people online I've heard say that she does not handle herself well, but I don't know. I think she's a great anchor. She's someone that you do want to root for, and I mean, maybe you want to root for her to sign the book. Like that's a whole other thing. But I mean, you know, you want her to succeed, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Other extremely important characters in this show are Aunts Hilda and Zelda. I could not love them more. But is there one I love more than the other? That is the question. How do you feel? What's your take on the ants?
I absolutely love the Joan Crawford Betty Davis thing they have going on. You know, from like whatever
that
happened to Baby Jane. Like they definitely, you know, it's, and I think the, I mean, obviously this show is sourced from the comics that Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa oversaw.
Mm-hmm.
Or overseas, because there's no reason for me to think that it's over. But, you know, their relationship is the same, whether it's in the sitcom, you know, where you've got the older, more responsible sister, you know, you've got Zelda, she's more exacting, right? And then you've got Hilda, who's just more fun-loving. And it's, you see that here, but, like, it, you know, it all takes on, like, an even more, like it just has a much more evil glint here, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that like when they fight, Zelda kills Hilda and buries her.
Yeah.
Like, knowing that she's going to come back, but it's still,
right,
you
right.
know, she observes.
But it's dark.
Yeah, and she observes at one point, right? She's like, it's taking you longer to come back. And it's like, you know, and the show doesn't just treat that, you know. I mean, I think it eventually gets into this, you know, there's a bit in the second half of the season where, you know, they kind of talk about Zelda, you know, wanting to have had kids of her own and stuff, and how, you know, the two aunts are like these different types of, like, femininity. You know, they embody femininity in different ways, you know, where, like, Zelda's more of a vamp, where Hilda is very domestic, right?
Right.
And how, like, you know, like, those are these two, I mean, this is the way that it informs why they spar, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lucy Davis plays Hilda, and she is so, she just kills me. I mean, I think a lot of folks will know her from, well, if you, Wonder Woman, I think most recently, she had a great supporting role in Wonder Woman, but she was the Pam of the British Office, the original Office.
She was the Dawn,
she's in Shaun of the Dead. She's just been great forever, and I love what she does with Hilda. Like, it's such, like, a goofy kind of flighty character, but she feels very real and grounded. But she adds all these little touches where, even if she's not the focus of a scene, you kind of see her kind of doing a little, you can't get my impression across the mic because it's not that great to begin with. But, like, there's so many little movements and little head tilts and things that she does. It's amazing. And then, yeah, Miranda Otto is Zelda, I think, is really great. And at the first half of the season, you're like, oh, she's just kind of, I mean, she's fun. She is vampy for sure, but she seems a little mean-spirited. But as the season goes on and as Sabrina's going through things, you see her kind of grappling with really her, like, beliefs in the Church of Satan and everything, mm-hmm. and kind of coming to terms with that and realizing that, yeah, this religion maybe has empowered her, but then she really comes to terms with how the religion itself, especially through Father Blackwood, is also being shaped by men and the patriarchy, and is maybe confining her more than she had ever thought. So I love her arc. I think it's incredible. And they both end in an interesting place, which the season in an interesting place, which we can touch on in a bit.
Yeah.
The rest of the cast, who is your favorite from the rest of the supporting cast? Do you have what, like, is there a standout character for you?
Oh, God, Ambrose. Chance Perdomo is amazing. I mean, he's beautiful.
Yes.
And I know, like, a lot of people were very upset about, like, not having a talking Salem. And, like, I don't mean to diminish Ambrose's presence at all, but, you know, the way that he perches on things and the way he kind of, like, slinks around, like, he's got the, I mean, I feel like we're getting that Salem character without it being the Salem character, you know?
Yeah, we still have a cat that talks, basically, in the form of him. Mm-hmm. And he has to stay in the house, too, as most cats would. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Interesting. You brought up the comics earlier, and I had read the comics that have come out thus far in the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina series, and there are a lot of differences. And Salem in those comics does talk and has, like, a pretty detailed backstory, and I wonder if we'll get to that in the second season. But I think you're definitely right. Like, Salem is there to be cute and kind of save the day time and again, but Ambrose really fills that, like, witty retort, like, kind of sly ally to Sabrina role that I think people are looking for. And yeah, he's so great. And I love his, like, robes and just house fashion.
Oh, yeah.
And he's pansexual. So pansexual LGBTQ icon. We're happy to have that. I'm excited to see what happens with him now that he's not so housebound. And at the end of the season, he kind of finds himself in an odd place where he's, like, looking around. He's like, holy shit, I'm in Father Blackwood's, like, weird boys club all of a sudden. And I don't even, that seemed to come out of nowhere in some respects, but, like, I think that'll be important for him in his arc in season two, which I'm excited to see.
Oh, yeah, it's a small moment, but, like, he, you know, you mentioned the way that Hilda will be seen in the background kind of, like, gulping, right? Like, it's
yeah, yeah.
It's a nonverbal thing, but it still gets so much across. And the way he kind of looks around wide-eyed, like, whoa, at the end when, you know, they're all, like, toasting to, like, you know, man power kind of stuff or warlock power, is hilarious.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then I mean, Ambrose is my favorite, but we 1000% have to give a shout out to Mary Wardwell, aka, well, Madam Satan, the artist formerly known, or currently known as Madam Satan, formerly known as Mary Wardwell. She is something else. My God, what a performance. What hair. Like, Carrie Russell and Connie Britton better be looking out, because Michelle Gomez, that hair is luscious.
Seriously, it is the hair that the one character from Inhumans should have had.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh God, that I saw some clips from that. That hair is, her hair is a creature all its own and is gorgeous. Mary Wardwell's. I think the two, like, such a fun character. The two things I kind of wish we got is we get essentially one scene with her as this kind of like nebbish Mary Wardwell, the teacher that they all knew. Seems very sweet, has a good relationship with Sabrina. I wish we would have seen a little bit more of that prior mm-hmm. to see what this transformation really means. And then I also wish she would have gotten a little bit more of like the students questioning her and being like, what is, why is Mrs. Wardwell all of a sudden like wearing very low cut shirts? And I don't know. It seems like it goes unquestioned that she is all of a sudden this completely different person. And I wish the show would have like let the characters interrogate that more, because I think it could have been fun. But I'm by no means complaining about what we do get, because she's a blast.
Oh, yeah. Michelle Gomez is amazing, especially once they really let her, you know, do her thing,
yeah.
right? Like early Definitely. On, she's, you know, there's a little too much of that, like just kind of, you know, hiding out in the shadows and watching
Lurking,
things happen.
Lurking, yeah.
yeah, and it makes sense at the end, right? When you find out that, like, she hasn't been trying to destroy Sabrina, right? She has mm-hmm. actually been trying to mentor her in a sense. But yeah, it considering she went from being, you know, the kind of, everybody was kind of, do you remember when you first meet her and the students all kind of laugh at her, you know, at Sabrina for inviting yeah. her to hang out with them? And I'm like, and so they go from that to like these, to her like walking around in these pumps and these beautiful sheath dresses, you know, like,
yeah.
And everybody's just kind of like, and considering it's a small town, you know, like for
right,
nobody to
course.
Be like, oh, maybe, you know, like maybe she's having a lot of really great sex and that's why she looks amazing, right? And no, everybody's right. just kind of like, maybe she finally found a different store to shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her emerald like satin house robe thing is another great piece that I want to own for myself. Lots of other characters to get into, but we should take a quick break and then we'll get back and talk more about just the season in general.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Okay, we're back. And of course, I'm here with Danette Chavez this week. And we're talking all of season one of Sabrina. Talking about our favorite points, some things that we questioned, that sort of thing. We just touched on a lot of our, like, you know, the big main characters and a lot of our favorite parts there. But and when we started the conversation, we were talking kind of about the arc of the series. I think it's interesting that this season is 10 episodes and it does kind of break down in a few different acts in a mm-hmm. sense. And we end in this really interesting place where the past like 7 or 8 episodes of Sabrina's actions, her kind of taking charge even when she shouldn't or she doesn't have a full grasp of her powers, a lot of that really kind of falls back on her, especially with the whole Tommy, bringing Harvey Kinkle's brother Tommy back to life, I think is pretty fascinating. And I really like that you kind of get this, you know, she is the protagonist of the series that we're supposed to relate to. I really like that she makes these decisions that aren't maybe the best decisions, and they actually do come back and bite her in the ass. Like, she does feel the consequences, and people do kind of turn on her. I mean, she loses her boyfriend, and I feel like, you know, in an average teen series, you don't always see the lead get their, have their reckoning in such an intense way like you do in the show. So I applaud the show for going there.
Oh, yeah. You know, she actually acts like a teenager, right? Like, she, mm-hmm. you know, she, her adolescence is probably a bit different from yours. I don't know if somebody asked you to meet them in the woods and sign your name into the devil's book. But, you know, her teen years are different from ours, but she's still kind of impetuous, you know. She still thinks that having good intentions is more important than anything else, right? Like, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter that she, you know, brought back a soulless body on some level. Like, or it's, maybe she doesn't think that it doesn't matter, but it's more like it. Everybody should understand that at least, you know, that she did it all with the best of intentions. And that, to me, is a very kind of adolescent thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's learning, as everyone does in their teen years. And it's just naturally you're going to make mistakes, and it's going to be awkward. And this just happens to have like way bigger implications when we're talking about like souls and Satan himself and that sort of thing. It's really funny. I mean, it makes for a great allegory about like growing up and learning yourself and learning about yourself, but also not just with the teen characters. I mean, again, we already talked about Zelda and Hilda. Like, I think there's a whole thing about learning about your own power, and not just like magical powers, but power within yourself to kind of take charge of your own life. I loved that whole arc, and it's really interesting where things end with her. I mean, she's one got like, I don't even know if you call it platinum hair. It's like, it's basically white yeah. hair in the very last scene. And she's with the Wicked Sisters, and like, yeah, I think we're kind of conditioned to see the Wicked Sisters at the beginning as bad guys. So in a sense, you're like, oh wow, she's fully on the dark side now at the end. But we also learn a lot more about them as the season goes along, and we know that they're just like complicated teens trying to grow up and navigate yep. this weird magic world too. So I really like that it ends up in that way. I want to talk more about the Wicked Sisters, because it ties into these bigger issues, I guess. Issues is maybe the right word, with the show that some people have called attention to. One, I want to say, like, I think a lot of people have like really been happy with the show and enjoying the show. I've seen so many gifs of it on Twitter already, which I always think is a good sign. But you know, I think there's certain outlets I've seen have run some pieces talking about how it treats its characters of color and how it addresses gender and sexuality. And one such article was from Gizmodo, with the headline being "The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina's Characters of Color Deserve Better." You read this, and actually you had sent it to me, Danette. What was kind of your read on this piece?
Well, I mean, it's tricky because, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned that my review is one of the, like, it gets tricky when you're trying to hit that embargo, right? When you've got a review and,
yes.
you know, like, you want to get it out early. To, you know, to like pique people's interest, and also because, you know, we had episodic reviews, right? So I was like, you know, one whets the appetite, and then you've got the recaps right. to really like dig into it. I mean, this is so the issue, or, you know, like the crux of the piece that you mentioned is that, you know, that representation, there's a difference between diversity and representation is what it boils down to, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's great that the show has so many characters of, so many performers of color in, like, major mm-hmm. roles, right? Like, Tati Gabrielle is Prudence, right? Who is another, like, amazing character in this show.
So great.
But the problem is, you know, she has an interesting arc, but it's, you know, like, it kind of boils down to daddy issues, which, you know, like, and this, mm-hmm. you know, they might, I don't think that they have a ton of writers of color in their writer's room, you know? And so, like, that informs how developed the show is. But, like, the big thing is there's that scene where, you know, they're supposed to be reenacting the hanging of these 13 witches. And
oh, yeah. The harrowing episode.
Yeah. Right. And because, you know, I mean, they have what looks like a lynching scene, ultimately. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, what gets tricky with all these shows about, like, magical beings, like, I mean, when I think about stuff like Harry Potter and how, mm-hmm. you know, we have the idea is that there are certain characters that basically represent marginalized people, but then they ignore, like, actual history, right? Like in Harry Potter, mm-hmm. like people say, you know, half-bloods and, you know, muggles and stuff, but nobody really talks about, you know, the lack of Asian students or, like, you know, Hispanic. Do you know what I mean? And so this is,
yeah,
like that scene is just, ugh. But it speaks to, like, uh-huh. a bigger problem. And it's that, you know, when you're not really thinking about how these characters, you know, when you don't have the right people working or helping you shape these stories, like, you know, you can end up with something that's insensitive. But also, you know, the bigger problem is that when you're trying to tackle a real life issue through these, like, metaphors, and then you ignore the real life issue, right? Like, it's how you end, because, you know, the idea is that Sabrina is the one who's being bullied for being, you know, mixed. And it's like, okay, but, like, so then is this happening in some alternate reality where, you know, the Salem,
right, right.
the Salem witch hunt happened, but slavery didn't? Like, it's, yeah, and this is by no means the only example of this, but, you know, I think
sure.
the piece that we're talking about, I think it's Charles Pulliam Moore. He, you know, like, it's part of that bigger issue that when, you know, when you're trying to tackle these, like, relevant issues, you know, in these metaphorical ways, that sometimes you miss the mark by not just, you know, dealing with them head on.
Yeah. I mean, right. It's great that Hollywood is slowly getting better at casting, putting more diverse casts together. But I mean, the truth is, it's still, you know, you hear that term post-racial society tossed around a lot. We're obviously, it's not the case, and we're never going to be in that case because of what you talked about with our history, the country's history with slavery and that sort of thing. So it seems it's just an odd choice to kind of show that lynching scene and just not have it, like, really affect the characters in any real way, especially Prudence. Yeah, and you brought up Harry Potter. I kind of was thinking it in relation to that and, like, X-Men, like the mutants in X-Men. Like,
yeah.
The mutants and wizards, they're supposed to, like, be stand-ins for these marginalized communities.
Yeah.
But then it also just doesn't really address that those marginalized communities also still exist.
Exactly.
So it lets you kind of just talk about things broadly. It's almost like wanting to have the best of both worlds, but without really addressing the issues.
Yep.
But I mean, speaking of representation, the other thing that was brought up, another Gizmodo piece headline was "Chilling Adventures of Sabrina has some confused views on sexuality," and it goes on to talk more about pansexuality, which we can touch on in a second. But it also mentions Susie, the character. I believe the actor's name is Lachlan. Oh, forgetting their last name now, but. Played by Lachlan.
They're
non-binary. That's it. Thank you. I want to say Lachlan Monroe, but that's the guy that plays Hal on Riverdale. Very different. I really liked Susie, and I like that. I mean, Susie gets pushed around, especially by the jock bullies early on. But Susie kind of learns to come rise above that in some senses. And I had read an interview with Lachlan Watson where Lachlan, like, really kind of helped shape what the story was. There was going to be a whole storyline within the season where Susie comes out as non-binary to the rest of the characters. But I think Lachlan said that they felt that it wasn't necessary. And they just kind of let Susie exist as they are, which I thought was a really kind of special thing that you don't see a ton of.
Yeah. I mean, I think Lachlan Watson is great in the role. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the way that this show handles it up until you get to that revelation, right, that Susie is from this, you know, she has like this amazing lineage, right? Like her ancestor, Dorothea Putnam, she brought over witches, basically. I mean, the idea is that she was like helping like marginalized people from the beginning, mm-hmm. right? And which is mm-hmm. which is very cool. But up until then, you know, like you just kind of see Susie get knocked around, you know, whenever, you know, like yeah. Sabrina kind of yeah. like warps back into the high school. And then it's like, oh, you know, Susie's getting beat up again. It thankfully doesn't get to that. It doesn't go to the extent of like, you know, because I mean, you know, we're talking about representation, right? And a lot of right. LGBTQ characters, we just see their suffering, right? Like, there's no other way to, like, depict marginalized people than to show their suffering. And it's like, Pose does a great job of showing, you know, like, the bravery and the talent mm-hmm. and, you know, like, the love. And, you know, early on, Susie's character is just kind of like, you know, she's defined by her suffering, which is not ideal.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I'm glad right. that they flesh it out, but you know, clearly they still have some work to do.
That article on Gizmodo also addresses one. I mean, I brought up the jock bullies at the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of like kind of gay panic jokes with them.
Yeah.
Which, like, as a gay man myself, I kind of, like, I don't necessarily take that personally, but I do mm-hmm. understand why. It's, like, this is part of a long history of TV and other media kind of, like, throwing gay panic jokes in our face. And I see why that can be an issue. But it was also, like, it's only a gay panic thing in these jocks' minds. But, of course, the show highlighting that within the show is just further perpetuating that idea.
Yeah.
And the article also brings up just the fact that, like, apparently the witches are all pansexual, but it had some issues with the way that was portrayed as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think Beth Elderkin, who's, you know, at our sister mm-hmm. site, IO9, mm-hmm. You know, she mentions that the way... And she sourced a lot of quotes from the performers, right? From, you know, Chance Perdomo, about how, or I'm sorry, the actor that plays
Nicholas Scratch?
Yes.
His name is Gavin Leatherwood, which also might as well be a warlock
right?
name.
Exactly. You know, but the idea that, like, you know, she raises the question of why exactly they can't just love, right? Because it's, you know, mm-hmm. like already there's this idea that, you know, bisexuals or pansexuals are greedy or they're flighty, right? Because like, you know, they don't just pick one, right? Like, you know, you're not just into this or the other, right? It's still this very binary way of thinking. And so, you know, she raises some good points about how, like, mm-hmm. you know, sex can exist without love, and you can be in love without having a whole lot of sex or any sex, right? But the idea
that
they would be mutually exclusive is weird. You know, it's again, it's not ideal. They have an actual pagan working with the team on their creative team. So maybe, you know, they can, for the next season, they can, you know, expand their depiction of pansexuality.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see, because I know they're in production on season 2 at the moment. I mean, it was initially greenlit for the 2 seasons. So I wonder if they're able to take into any of the fan response into account, even like the positive stuff, like, oh, the fans really like this character. Let's show more of them. This is unrelated to anything, but so the Weird Sisters, there's Prudence, there's Agatha, and then there's Dorcas, which it took me until episode 9 to realize that Dorcas wasn't like their mean name. They were just calling her like you're such a Dorcas. I feel very dumb for not putting that together. I assume that's a name with like a witchy history in its own, but I'm
very
not sure.
It's a very old fashioned name. And what I found that helps me with those, I watch almost everything with the closed captioning on, which, you know, which,
oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, which smart. Really helps with that kind of thing. Because, I mean, the first time you hear it, yeah, like it takes a second, you know, like mm-hmm. where you're like, wait, what did they call her? And then you realize, yeah, that's her name.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about this show in relation to Riverdale, but we're kind of about time for another break. So let's throw to commercials real quick.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Okay, and we're back, still talking season one of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. You know, this show, at least as it was written about initially, was kind of conceived as a spinoff of sorts of Riverdale. I think there was maybe a point in time where it was going to be on the CW.
Yeah.
And of course it wasn't. It was on Netflix, and I think that allowed us to, obviously, one, show a little bit more blood and get a little bit darker, and more like realistic in terms of like Satanism, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But also let us get so much darker. I don't know. They're different shows for sure. You know, obviously we here at Dial In for Maple are way into Riverdale, yeah, and just never stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I think that like where this show succeeds, that like, you know, a lot of people brought up some issues with season two, that sometimes season two of Riverdale didn't always succeed, is that, you know, oh, I said this earlier on in our recording, like even when it gets dark, this show is always like having some fun. It's like very, there just seems to be a lot of fun. Like the Archie prison stuff, Archie mafia stuff in season two, like it just got so heavy-handed, and yeah, like it did get fun in one episode where a character named Papa Poutine shows up. Then I'm like, oh, now we're working with fire here. But like, I think that there's some ways in which the show succeeds in ways that Riverdale didn't always.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a better drama than Riverdale. Mm-hmm. But you know, Riverdale is basically a soap opera. And I think, you know, mm-hmm, people mm-hmm. use that term way too dismissively, you know, like but it's a great soap opera, right? Like I think about the mafia, did not keep up with the show week to week after the first season. There's just so much TV.
there is.
And so, you know, I'd catch up, you know, like with, you know, one half of the season and then the other half of the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the time I get to the third season and this idea of Archie being in jail and then like this performance outside the prison yard where, you know, they're singing an Elvis Presley song, I was just like, I don't question, you know, I mean, if I were an expert like you and Mara and, of course, LaToya Ferguson, who reviews Riverdale for the AV Club.
Love LaToya.
I might question things more, but like, I don't question it. I'm just like, I'm just along for the ride. So I do think Sabrina is, it's a tighter drama. And I also think that mm-hmm. the goals are different here. I think, you know, they're Aguirre Sacasa. I always worry that I'm getting that wrong.
Me too.
He's much more ambitious about, like, you know, the bigger themes of the show. But, you know, to tie the two together, you know, I think about something that LaToya has written about in her reviews, and it's that even the adults in Riverdale don't act like adults. Like, everybody is kind of a teenager, right? Like, you know, they can barely control themselves. But here, you know, even if the adults haven't always acted with the best intentions, even if they don't always get the best results, they do act like adults. Like, there's, you know, they, and it speaks to, like, the, you know, the the town's wicked past. Like, you know, there's a very visual reference or a very obvious visual reference to Nightmare on Elm Street in one of the episodes. Harvey is on his bed with headphones and that kind of like crop top.
Ah, the cutoff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Okay, so that's like, you know, like it's a little sly, it's a little fun, but when you think about the overall show, like what it has in common with the Nightmare on Elm Street movies is this idea that like you can protect, and you know, even the house, the Haunting of Hill House, and it's this idea that like the lengths that people will go to protect kids, but it usually involves, you know, just completely depriving them of agency, right? Like they just don't tell these kids that Freddy Krueger exists, or that, you know, ghosts are real, or that, you know, hey, no, like this town hung 13 women, you know, like, and like this is a part of their history. And I think this is, for me, like this is what the shows have in common, but also what Sabrina does goes about in a very different way.
You're totally right. Yeah, that's a great assessment of the two. And of course, we can't talk about Riverdale in relation to this show without mentioning, and I'm wondering if you caught this too, in episode 7 or 8 or 9, Mary Wardwell orders a pizza. Yes. Did you recognize the pizza boy?
I did not.
Oh, okay. So his name is Ben, and it even says so on his name tag. He has shown up in Riverdale multiple times, and in fact, he's pretty important to the beginning of season 3, but he was like this weird character that you would notice. He was in season one working at the drive-in theater, and then he showed up in season 2. He had like this weird interaction with Chick. I don't know what the timeline of Sabrina is in relation to Riverdale, but I mean, I think you could assume that in this show, Mary Wardwell maybe would have tried to eat him, because we know that she does eat people's souls. So I'm not really sure. It's really funny that they threw that in, because it's essentially like an Easter egg if you're watching and paying attention to Riverdale, but yeah. I don't know that it really like fits in with the storyline of Riverdale at all. Maybe this all took place before the most recent happenings in season 3.
It'll be very, very, very funny, right? If like the guy suddenly starts behaving differently.
Well, he sure does. I don't want to spoil anything for you, but we get some interesting stuff happening. We'll talk more after off mic. Man, I want to talk so much more about all this. We're on a time constraint, of course, which is tough to talk about a whole season, but I do think we should hop in. We like to hop in the speculation booth on Dial In for Maple. We imagine it being at Pops to talk about what we think is going to happen next. But now we're sitting down at Dr. Cerberus's bookshop/cafe to talk about what we think is going to happen in season 2. What are your thoughts? Like, what would you be looking forward to in season 2?
You know, I want to see Sabrina really just go for it as a witch, you know, because she is aware that she comes, you know, she has this, you know, impressive lineage. You know, her dad was the high priest at one point, and like, I want to see her being very ambitious there. I think that would be very cool. And, you know, I think we've already addressed how we want to see, how we'd like to see other characters rounded out, you know, because I would like to see more of Prudence, especially considering, and God, I really hope that no one listening to this hasn't finished the show, but, you know, there's that bit with Zelda where she has taken Father Blackwood's twin daughter from him to protect her, and she could have only done that with Prudence's knowledge. And so, like, that for me is exciting. Like, I would really like to see how they all end up working together, because, you know, it sets up this, you know, like there's Father Blackwood's boys club, and then, you know, Zelda's putting together her, you know, woman identifying club.
You're right. I wonder too. I mean, this kind of ties into something that I would love to see, is that, you know, we kind of get Madame Satan's like full plan at the very end of the season there, which is she wants to become queen. But it's like, I could see something happening where she finds out that Satan does want Sabrina to replace her, but then he's just willing to cast her aside, in which case then she's going to want to turn on Satan too. And I would really love if she kind of is the big bad for a while, but then we like kind of need to have her and Sabrina team up.
Yeah.
I would love for that to happen. And I wonder, yeah, I mean, it does definitely appear that the show is going to go more into the like down with the patriarchy story, which I'm really excited about. Like, I would love for them to kind of be like, wow, we think we have like free will within this like religion, but we're still being controlled by the people at the top, namely Father Blackwood. I would love to see some of that, some more of that. Well, we talked about Zelda ending up with that baby at the end of the season, mm-hmm. Father Blackwood's other baby. The other, Hilda's end of season little twist is she kind of has like a little flirty back and forth, little meet cute with Dr. Cerberus. And then the very end, they kiss and he walks away and his eyes flash. What does that mean?
Okay, so I'm jumping a little ahead, but maybe we'll just like merge the fan theory stuff in with our speculation.
Please.
But there's obviously somebody hunting witches, right? I mean, like that's what we're, you know, there's the warlock that ended up at the Spellman mortuary. And so I'm thinking he's the witch hunter.
Yeah. I mean, that could make sense. There were so many mentions of that and then it isn't really addressed. I mean, I thought it was going to be Ambrose's love interest, Luke, for a little bit there, mm-hmm. especially with the way the iguana familiar turns up dead after he had spent the night, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So yeah, we've got to get more into that. But it did make me wonder, it's like, is the witch hunter also like, why would his eyes change color? Does he then have magical powers too? I mean, it's also like, how willing is the show to get into other fantastical creatures? Like, he could be a werewolf, he could be a vampire. Like, I don't know.
True. I think they're definitely going to work in different types of like supernatural beings, you know, like it's hopefully they won't completely lose, you know, the thread along the way. But it will be interesting to see that there's been so much witch hunter talk, you know, Harvey comes from a line of witch hunters, which I don't even think that's just a way of making the character more interesting. For me, that spoke to how, you know, even like the nicest guy benefits from the patriarchy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, totally. I guess we haven't even like really gotten into Harvey a ton. He's just so innocent and such a good supportive boyfriend for so long. But yeah, that kind of jibes with everything else going on, and they kind of have to part ways. But it's interesting. And then of course we also get this Nicholas Scratch character.
Yeah.
I'm kind of jumping through too, there's a fan theory on the comments of the reviews from a commenter, Father Octavian. They said about Nick Scratch, but this is a show that has done some deep dives into Judeo-Christian mythology, so it would know that before his fall from grace, Lucifer was the morning star, and in quotes, and no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. This theory says, having made Sabrina fearful of a towering goat creature, she'd never suspect her friend Nick. That presents a powerful avenue of seduction. So this theory basically posits that maybe Nick is also like the devil, Satan incarnate, working in certain ways. Whether that is a fully different being from this like goat-like Satan creature we've been seeing or what, I'm not really sure. But that's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
Because Nick Scratch is like an old folksy name for the devil as well.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
Could just be an illusion, but...
I mean, yeah, it could just be that he's a handsome devil, because he is, but, you know.
Right. Absolutely. Man, okay, we really, truly are, unfortunately, running out of time, but are there any other big, like, theories or thoughts about, like, about season two or where we might be headed that you want to address?
You know, just that, like, again, this is a fan theory from Ryan AAD, and it's that, you know, that Zelda maybe just wants to take another crack at parenthood, right? That she, you know, she feels like she failed in raising Sabrina. Although, you know, I think Sabrina taking her place with the Weird Sisters might change her feelings there. But it, you know, I do think that that teases, you know, more development for the character. And I am here for more Miranda Otto. So it's intriguing.
She is so good. Absolutely. I think it says a lot that, like, you know, in these 10 episodes, we sort of get to know all these characters, and we really have come to like a lot of them, and we want to know more. We want to see more. I think that says a lot about how much the show accomplished in these 10 episodes, that, you know, people are excited to see more from everyone. And that's all to say, like, we didn't even get to really touch on just the sets and production design of this whole thing. Like, it is a really incredible series on that front too. Well, we'll take one last quick break before we come back to say goodbye. But yeah, we'll be right back. Okay, and we are back to wrap things up with a special edition of Dial M for Maple, aka Dial M for Magic, where we've been talking about the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Usually we wrap up every episode with what we call the blue and gold, where we talk about the life, the real world outside of Riverdale and the cast and the funny things they post on social media. I just really quickly wanted to shout out the video that Netflix put out, which I thought was really smart. They had the cast of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I think they watched at least an episode or two or clips of the show and showed their reactions. And, like, that show is so, so, so different from what we've been watching on Netflix just now. So it's really funny to see them react and kind of in horror. I mean, they definitely seem to like it, but react in horror to, like, what the show is. It was so funny. You saw that, right? That video?
Yes. It's especially funny because Melissa Joan Hart is in those God's Not Dead movies. So I do kind of wonder.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
That adds a whole nother layer. But yeah, no, that video is great. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I am wondering how long until some of the more, like, conservative corners of, like, Christianity come across this and, like, start to, like, try and get it blacklisted or taken off Netflix because of how far into, like, Satanism and the show goes. I mean, it's really, and the occult and all of that, like, it's really impressive. Obviously, really well researched and super interesting. I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we have to wrap things up? Any other final thoughts on the show or anything at all?
Gosh, like, I wish we had been able to talk about Jazz.
Yes,
because
she's great.
Yeah, she's great, and, you know, I really like that she has her own, you know, she's got a really interesting, like, family history.
Totally.
Yeah, it's but. This is what I get for babbling about about Nightmare on Elm
that's
Street.
Always how it goes. No, that's always how recording these goes. It's totally fine. I'm so happy to have you. Maybe we can do a part two one day where we dig even deeper into some of this stuff. But we should wrap things up. So thank you again, Danette. I'll run into our credits. Dial M for Maple is a production of Onion Inc. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood, and our engineer is Stephen Hollinger. Our producer is Leah Steltenpole, and our creative director is Leo Garcia. The show was hosted this week by myself, Cameron Sheets, and thanks again to special guest Danette Chavez. Danette, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. If you like the show, tell your friends. They won't even have to try that hard to find us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and in anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at Dial M for Maple. Thanks, and we'll see you guys very, very soon when Riverdale takes us back to the 90s with the Midnight Club. Bye-bye, Ravens.